This is URN.
Hello and welcome to The Popular Table, URN's top pop culture show and one of the many shows on URN that aren't all white.
Really, Matt? Really, Matt?
We have got a cracking show for you planned today. But before we continue with it, we'd like to pay our respects to some amazing talents who we lost over the break. Lemmy from Motorhead passed away in December, and January has already seen the loss of David Bowie, Alan Rickman, and Glenn Frey from the Eagles. We will be having a discussion on the legacy that some of these people have left behind later on in the show. But if you have any special memories to share, please do message us in. We are having a few issues with tech today, so if you do text us in and it's not coming through, please remember that you can always tweet us at Popular Table. Right, so we've got an exciting lineup planned for you today. But before we go into all of that, just a really quick recap of things that are happening on campus. The Popular Culture Lecture Series is starting next week from Monday. The first session is on Caroline Lawrence and the Power of Sadness, or Virgil for Reluctant Readers, by Dr. Helen Lovett from the School of Humanities. It's every Wednesday in the physics building. I'm ashamed to say I've forgotten the room this year because it has changed, but to keep an eye out on our Twitter and Facebook pages for updates. We also want to say that we are very aware of the change in Doctor Who showrunners. We will not be sharing that as a news story today because James Goodison, our wonderful head of speech, wants to come into the show and discuss it with us next week. So any Whovians listening in, don't worry, we haven't forgotten you. We're giving you a bit of special notice next week. Right, so let's get our first show of 2016 rolling. Who do we have in the studio today and what is your news?
Hello, Halix here. So, happy new year, everyone. And my news is not really, I mean, it's news, but it's Star Wars related or original. So, I've seen the film twice. I loved it. And after the film, after I've watched the film, what I wanted was to know more about the story. So, I bought the book Before the Awakening by Greg Ruger, which follows the three main characters, so Rey, Finn, and Poe, right before and sometimes along before, but right before the film, so you can know a bit more about their backstory. It's well written, it's really good, and we know more about the story, and I loved it. Go and read it. Before the Awakening, it's really good.
Shivani, what do you have to share?
Hey guys, Happy New Year. And I think I have the funniest bit of news I've heard all week, because two very, very talented young people, comedians, Elijah Daniel and Nick Sanchez, wrote a book that I can't wait to read. It's called Trump Temptation, The Billionaire and the Bellboy. And I'm just going to read the description about this item for you. It's available on Amazon.
But can we very quickly ask you, Shivani, before you do read it out, this is safe for work to read out, yes?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just making sure. So anyone listening in, you can read this wherever you like.
It's I don't see why you wouldn't read it anywhere. Read it on the train, read it everywhere. Give it to your mum. He was a billionaire, I was a bellboy. Can I make it any more obvious? It all started one fateful afternoon in the summer of 2012. I was working as a bellboy at the Trump Hotel in Hong Kong on an internship program. This was my first time in a big city. It was all I could have ever dreamed of and more, but little did I know it was all about to change. So far it has reached 199 on the US Amazon Kindle book charts, and it's number one in all the categories that it's put in. So it's number one on the humour and things like that. So I would say definitely give it a read. It's got 5.0 out of 5 stars, and every customer seems to be happy so far. And I'll be writing a book report about it, so I'll let you know how it goes.
Hey everyone, it's your favourite guy. It's Carl with a K, also known as Carlos Perez, also known as Carlton Pearson, or just Carl, as people like to call me. I got a bit of entertainment for you this week. I've been watching this video, which I saw show up on Ellen, and I've watched about 30 times. In it, you see your favourite black president, Barack Obama, addressing the Union of the States, and in this video, which is a remix, it's not real, unfortunately, he literally drops the mic. I think that's a great end to his two-term presidency, and I think, you know, he will definitely, in my mind, be the coolest president that ever lived.
Wow, you really like him. Okay. I like him too, so yeah. But hello everyone, I'm finally back. You can listen to my voice, probably being very loud right now, so you already know who I am. I'm Vicky, I'm back from holidays. And also from my exams, my very tiring exams. And I hope you're all having a good time this afternoon, because I'm gonna right now talk about TV series, because come on, this is what we like to do over the holidays, you know, watch a little bit of Netflix. Yeah. So I've been watching The Tudors, which is a really good Netflix TV series. It's interesting because it talks a little bit more about the British Empire and the Tudors. And interestingly, it's based upon real life events, and most of the times it follows it, which kind of impressed me, because they like, usually this kind of TV series, they like to change some details, like in Rain. It's not my favorite one. I'm not gonna say that it's in the same level as Rain, that talks about Mary, Queen of Scots. But it's really interesting. I've been learning history just by watching it. Of course, you need to have some previous background reading so you actually know what is going on about, and you can distinguish between what is real and what is not. But nonetheless, it has been quite good to watch it, and it's impressed me. I could learn more about Anne Boleyn. So if you like history and if you like to have a good time, then you've got to watch it. Just give it a go.
Thanks for sharing that, Vicky. In case you haven't realized, it's Ibtisam here. You can also call me Ibi, or you can also call me that one. So my big story is, I say story, my big bit of geeking out is Agent Carter is back. And I'm super excited. I just watched the first episode today. I haven't had a chance to watch both of them yet, but I've watched the first of season two. It's interesting that we're talking about this because, you know, we will be bringing up a slight question regarding diversity later on in the show and representation of women. And Agent Carter is a wonderful, wonderful move forward in that. I particularly like how in season two, there's already a lot of character development for other female characters. The receptionist at the SSR. Oh my god, I love
She's
her.
So good.
She's fantastic. Lots of positive body image there, and she goes surfing. How amazing is that? In the 40s, which is just brilliant. And they've already hinted at the big bad this year being a major Marvel character. I'm not going to say who she is, but I'm really excited. I was really looking forward to Agent Carter coming back anyway, and I didn't think that I'd get even more excited after watching the first episode. How wrong I was. So that's our news for today. We'll be going into our first song break, but before we do, just to let you know what you've got coming up today, we'll be talking about David Bowie's legacy after our first song break, and then we'll be going into a discussion on female representation, particularly with the fiasco of Rey in the Star Wars toys. And it wouldn't be the popular table unless we talked about the most popular topic of the week, which is the Oscars controversy. Hello and welcome back to the Popular Table. If you have just joined us, I'm Ibi, and I'm joined in the studio today by Victoria, Alex, Carl and Shivani, and we have a really exciting, as always, show to welcome in the new year. Now, our first discussion is about the late David Bowie and the legacy that he left behind. As we are all, of course, aware, he passed away quite recently, and it's been a very sad time for a lot of his fans. He was extremely influential in terms of what he did for working against stereotypes. He was an amazing musician, But something that did pop up after his passing was the fact that he had sex with an underage girl. The story made a point of pointing out that she had consented to it, but in terms of the legality, it is still statutory rape. And we're going to be kind of looking at this whole point of how we can reconcile people whom we look up to and people who are inspirational on so many levels, perhaps doing things that aren't, well, not perhaps, but doing things that aren't, well, good. Good. So, for anyone who is listening, if you find this topic disturbing, you know, we do apologize. We'll be discussing it for about the next 10 to 15 minutes, so you can take a break if you like. We urge you not to, though.
No, don't.
And of course, if you have an opinion about it, please do message in. Tweet us at Popular Table. The website's having a bit of a kerfuffle at the moment, so we can't take in texts. But I'm going to open it up to the floor. What do people here think about kind of reconciling this kind of inspiration with someone who didn't do something very good?
First of all, we've got to remember upon the things that he did with his career and how impressive he was and how he contributed to music as well as to fashion, which I have to recognize him as an androgynous figure, and how he worked his looks against his stereotypes because he would dress up in androgynous ways, and how 5 years after it was legalized being gay, he just started to dress up and do all those things which could create his stereotypes. But let's think about how important and how relevant and how he changed things and minds, and this contribution, it can't be forgotten. Going on the second part, we've got to also think that, okay, maybe he committed a crime, but in my mind, I've got to say she consents, so I don't know, somehow, maybe even if it's not recognized on the law as, if it's recognized as law as raped, for me, I wouldn't see it that way, because imagine if he was 18 and she was 17, how much is a difference, like 1 year between one
there's
another,
a,
we don't know that
there's
exactly.
There's a Romeo and Juliet clause in most states where basically if a person over the age of consent and under the age of consent engage in activity, they, if there's no more than 3 years apart, they're allowed to do that. So when you say 18 and 17, that there's a clause which allows the judge to use that at their own discretion and kind of let it slide. But
that wasn't the case for this.
That wasn't the age gap, was it?
Do we know how old she was?
I don't know, but it was more than 3 years.
Yeah, she was definitely. I mean, she was. I know that quite a few of these statements have mentioned her age. I'm ashamed to say that I can't remember it off the top of my head, but she was definitely underage. It wasn't even a case of she was just a year under. She's quite underage.
Oh.
But I think this, what that raises then is this whole question of groupie culture as well, because you have to remember the time frame in which this took place wasn't the same type of time frame as this. And I'm not saying this in any way to suggest that what he did was acceptable, because in my opinion what that was wrong. But I'm also saying that there is an evolution in the music industry to how fans have been treated with regards to their autonomy and their respect. So I think that at the time this happened, there was also a lot less respect for the autonomy of fans over their own bodies.
And also, I think more on our sides as how we can remember him. There's also always with everyone this idea of seeing those people as perfect beings above everything, but we're all humans and we're not all perfect, or we're all not evil or dark, and that's really important to see that when we remember those people, those characters.
Yeah. But people are more than happy to talk about Tiger and Kylie Jenner having a definite relationship that is beyond the scope of legality in terms of sexually consent in terms of that respect. So people are more than happy to criticise Tiger for the fact that he's much older than her, but he's alive, so we're allowed to talk badly about him. Just because Barry's dead, does that mean we have to still remember all the great things he's done? Tiger's done revolutionary things for people in that industry.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because I remember when Kylie was 17 and he was already 26, but the fact that she consented and her family gave her support to just date him, even in silence, it meant that she didn't care much about the law. And because the law, she just grew up, she became a grown up, and it didn't become relevant anymore. So I don't think it was relevant back then for Bowie.
Can I add, however, though, and this is on the flip side of that, you're referring to two people who have a kind of specific power balance in terms of how celebrity culture works. It wasn't Tiger going out with an unknown, it was Tiger going out with Kylie Jenner. So there is that aspect as well to take into play.
So the law doesn't affect people who are famous or rich or powerful?
Oh God, no, nothing of that sort. I mean to simply say that there's a case of... In my head, both of them are illegal. But what I mean to say by that is that part of the discussion around what happened with David Bowie is also this question of whether he took advantage of a fan and whether he took advantage of a celebrity status. Whereas with Kylie Jenner's one, again, illegal in terms of the actual legality of it, but it wasn't a case of her being overawed by fame necessarily.
I understand that. Yeah, no, I understand that.
That's what I was trying to drive at, but I definitely see your point. I don't think that there is
But then, if Barry didn't know the age of the girl at the time of the incident...
What if the girl lied? We don't know that.
She could have quite easily said that I mean, there were 12-year-olds who look older than me, so if a girl dresses up, she can definitely make herself look of age.
What I think this particular discussion is, what I would like to say about this, and I think this has been the majority of the discussion of this, I think has been constructive rather than let's stop supporting him. And I think it's more a case of realizing what Alex said, that these individuals are flawed rather than hero worship or blind hero worship. I completely agree. I think it's there shouldn't be a case of let's victimize him for one thing he's done wrong. And let's not forget that unlike other controversial figures such as, I'm citing people who've been involved in controversies rather than people who've been charged with them, so I do put that disclaimer out, but people like Woody Allen or Roman Polanski, for them, the biggest contribution they've had is talent. But for David Bowie, in addition to that talent, he gave so many people a lot of confidence to be themselves. Mike Bench, who is our producer from last year, who is not here now because he's doing a wonderful year abroad in the States, sent us a message on our Twitter saying that, you know, as someone who was an extremely introverted individual, listening to David Bowie's Heroes is something that gave him a lot of self-confidence to go out and do a lot of things he did, including giving him the push to find what he loves, and that's what he's doing now as well. So it's a lot more complicated, I think, when it's someone who's not just a case of it's a talent and it's celebrity, but someone who has genuinely had a positive impact on people's lives.
And I would like to add also that it was not the only controversy with Bowie, but for a lot of things that he's done, it was some racism issues and that kind of stuff, and then after, he excused himself from some stuff that he said. So whilst we need to recognise the flaws and everything, we need to recognise also when those people who have had problematic behaviour and issues have then recognised their behaviour and issues, because it's never, you know, always good or always bad.
No, and I don't think a lot of us take that level of responsibility anyway, so kudos to that, definitely. I do want to read out another message that was sent out to us in anticipation of this, and this is from one of our listeners, Rachel Hoskins. It is a slightly long message, but I think it's a really important one to read out in its entirety, so a moment please. And I'm quoting here. David Bowie had a profound effect on my childhood. He was a gawky weirdo with dodgy teeth who managed to have the drive to do whatever he wanted. As a gawky weirdo who listened to their parents' music and never really fit in, an artist showing that they could reinvent themselves into fantastic images of creativity without ever compromising who they were, let me take a step back from who I was and what I thought was art and what people expected. Seeing his exhibition rekindled a passion for art and music, which his music had first inspired in me, a passion which was unconcerned with what was beautiful and conventional, and sometimes what I considered good and the urgent need to create, which I consider to be the legacy of Bowie in my life. I found out about his affair with a young girl before his death, and it was a difficult time for me as a diehard feminist and a lifelong fan. I took down his posters, I put away t-shirts, and tried to work out what this meant. Bowie was a visionary, and he did an awful thing, as do many of my favorite artists. Should I put away my Ramones t-shirts, never listen to Led Zeppelin again, dig out everything awful any artist has ever done before listening to them? I'm still not sure. But I've been quietly listening to David's records my dad passed down to me and thinking about the separation of an artist and their work. While I'm still not sure how I feel about it, I am certain of one thing. When I cried after listening to Rock and Roll Suicide, I wasn't mourning someone I knew or someone I could ever meet. I was mourning the memory of me listening to Low after my awful first week at university. I was mourning the way I had felt when Hunky Dory had got me through bullying. I was mourning a section of my own childhood and early adulthood. David Bowie did an awful thing, but I used his music to feel like I could do anything and be anyone, all the while never compromising who I am.
This is a beautiful message.
I think that's a really powerful way to sum up some of the things we've been trying to say as well. I know that I don't know if we've been quite as eloquent as that, and that's a very heartfelt message from a fan, but I think that's a really good way to wrap up this discussion, is to acknowledge that our heroes have flaws, and
just because somebody does a bad thing doesn't necessarily make them a bad person either.
Absolutely, and it's important to consider their contribution and their legacy as a whole, and I think that's what we should be doing with individuals like David Bowie, remembering that he's been an extremely inspirational human being despite flaws and despite mistakes. And I think that's a good way to look at people in general. I hope we can take something from that. We're going to be moving on to our next discussion now, but if you still have messages about this, please remember to tweet us at Popular Table. We're going to have a really short clip now as a teaser for what our next talk is. Why don't you all take a very quick listen to this?
Who are you?
I'm no one.
In case you weren't able to place that, that was a tiny clip from the Star Wars The Force Awakens trailer. The reason I picked that clip is because it was of Rey, one of the main protagonists, if not, in my opinion, the main protagonist,
yes,
saying, "I'm no one." And I think the Disney merchandising department might have taken that trailer a bit too literally, because in their astonishing amount of merchandise and toys and let's make more money drive, they kind of forgot that Rey exists. She's not there in a lot of the toys. She doesn't have her solo figure in many shops, including Target and Walmart. And if I may add from my own experience, the Disney store in London doesn't have a single solo Rey figure. And there wasn't a slot for it, so it wasn't that it was sold out, it was that it doesn't exist. She was only there in the background for the collective figure, so when you had six or more, she was one of them. But also, the biggest one, and I love this, and by love I mean I'm so frustrated I want to rip my hair out, is in the Monopoly version of The Force Awakens. Not only do they have a token for Luke Skywalker, who appears in the film very, very briefly, Darth Vader, who doesn't actually appear in the film at all, Kylo Ren and Finn, and Poe Dameron, who are also new characters and are therefore integral to the story, they don't have any for Rey, and their logic was, we don't want to give away a massive spoiler, but you've given away all of the other characters. What's going on? What do we have to say about this, people?
I've got a quote from an article about this, which is, they put a huge investment into marketing and merchandising the Kylo Ren character. They presumed it would be the big breakout role from the film. They were completely surprised when it was Rey everyone identified with or wanted to see more of. It's like, why? Why she's the hero of this film? Why were they surprised?
I think it's quite interesting because there's definitely a public for it to buy it, you know, because we also have to think this is just not something that they do because they want it or not. They want to make money out of it. And if there is a public, why they didn't put it on the market? I don't get it. It's their loss, really.
I think what's been happening is that in the movie industry, there are heroes, and just because of the way it is, there are more male heroes than there have been female heroes. So girls have been adapting to looking at a male hero and maybe kind of relating to that however they can. And I think boys also have the ability to see a hero and relate to the hero rather than relate to the gender of the hero. And so kids see Rey doing all this really awesome stuff in the film and relate to her, not necessarily thinking, oh, that's a female I'm going to relate. They think that's a hero, I want to be like that. And for some reason, there are some really uncreative and horrible people who just can't see that.
I'm still surprised that they put a black character as the main hero. That's amazing. Like, just thinking about the movie industry and the amount of hatred that they were getting for putting Finn in the movie, a black character, I was just like, well, I guess that's something, but it is, like, really weird that they don't have anything for Rey, which is, like, also baffling. Actually, she's, like, the main central thing on the poster, characters on the poster as well.
Yeah, and I think there are people who say, from an extremely conservative economic standpoint, that, oh, well, the toy industry and the film industry and the whole geek industry is a lot more male-centric, and, you know, there is sometimes that excuse. To them, I say, well, I would say something, but I can't on the radio, but I say that Star Wars is a film that has a female lead, a black co-lead, and a South American co-lead. It has a complex villain who is a man dealing not very well with emotions. And it's the biggest selling film of the year. It's the biggest selling film in the US of all time. It's already overtaken Avatar there. It's overtaken Spectre and Skyfall in the UK to be the biggest selling film here. So to you, I say, you have no idea who you're marketing to. Clearly, what is wrong with you people? But I think this is something that has a massive problem with how the people who make decisions have a disconnect and also have this thing about notions of marketability. One of our listeners, Shauna, has messaged in saying that what people sometimes forget in these structures is that toys and merchandising are less about the film's notion of representation and more about what people who are making these decisions perceive to be marketable. And they have what is effectively a very skewed opinion of marketability. But then also, it comes down to what people can afford to buy. In a lot of parts of the US, it is a certain demographic who can afford to buy things like a $140 BB-8, you know?
Yeah. Guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but is Star Wars a film which is which their main target audience are young guys, or not really? Are guys and girls? I'm asking, like, because I don't know.
Like, from the beginning, from the very first film in the 1970s, it was, you had women. At the time, the one that you saw more may have been male, but from the beginning, you have had a lot of women. And it's even truer now. I mean, especially with the hype all around it, you have so many people who have been watching it, and not just sci-fi fan, but also people who are not necessarily sci-fi fan, who may have never have seen another Star Wars film before, and they're still going to go and see it. So those people who are not sci-fi fan or kids or whatever may not buy the toy, but they may not have thought that the target audience would be this diverse, but it is this diverse.
Wow. So yeah, I have no idea really, because in my mind, if it was actually something which was just targeting then men and young guys, then I would get it, because I have to say, when I was younger, I would just buy dolls because I found it more interesting to just dress up dolls and do things that little girls do. So I don't know, maybe that would be a reason, but the fact that it's not a film which actually targets men and women, then I just don't really get it why there isn't a doll.
I think also one of the things that really surprised me with it is not only does the film itself have Ray in a central role, the trailers did as well. So it's not like, I mean, I picked out that clip because it was really funny in the context, but it's not like they didn't have her image in the other bits of marketing. It's not like they kept her as a surprise and suddenly went, oh, look, like she was clearly there in trailers, she was there in posters, she was there on the red carpet. So she, it's not even a case of they're taking the same marketing strategy the film did. They're just ignoring the fact that she's a very visible character.
And as much as I'm a fan of the film, I had not really like looked at the story before, and I knew that she was going to be one of the main, if not the main character.
Absolutely.
I think one of the interesting things is as well that I think because she's a strong female lead, that there's this kind of problem going on that they're not producing this much. Because if you look back to the original Star Wars films, there weren't really that many female characters, weren't there? Like Princess Leia, the main one we first see, or one of the first things, or the main things we see her doing that everyone associates her with, is when she's chained up next to Jabba the Hutt. And I'm thinking, she's basically running around the galaxy, in search of this hero. However, she's had a lot more publicity and all this other thing, and there were more action figures, I think, for her as a secondary character. So I think there's this whole issue with trying to associate Rey as the main figure, I guess, in society and in the toy market as a result currently. I'm not too sure. That's just something I noticed.
And there's also a very messed up thing with this, is that not only is Rey not put as a main character, but Kylo Ren was the villain, which we should not like see as a model like we see Rey as a model. But he is the one being pushed forwards to be this model that people...
The popular character.
That shouldn't be the case. That shouldn't be the marketing strategy of them. Like, this is so wrong.
That I agree with. However, if you look back at the original first three films, one of the coolest characters, despite being the evil one, was Darth Vader. Everyone has the masks, everyone wanted the red lightsaber, not Darth Maul's, of course. He wanted the single-ended one, and I think they're trying to capitalize on that popularity again, but, I mean, he isn't Darth Vader, let's leave it at that, but I think they're trying to associate that, even though we've developed in this whole kind of society where, you know, you don't want to be supporting the bad guy, even though in a lot of roles, the villain, or in some cases the anti-hero, is deemed as quite cool by a lot of adolescents and such.
Yeah, I just think that they missed a trick on how to actually market it properly. And I don't know, there was a mention also of how... and this is going to be reflected in the next part of our discussion on the Oscars diversity controversy as well. But the actual marketing team that made the marketing heads, the board that makes these decisions, they're quite old, they're quite white, they're quite male. So they don't have a connection in many ways with the audience that they're actually catering to. I'm not necessarily suggesting, you know, throw them all out and let us geeks run Star Wars, although I'd, you know, like for that to happen for purely selfish reasons. But...
I second that.
But I think that a lot of these people, because of how the system works and because of how the nature of merchandising is a lot less about actually sticking with the love for fans as it is about making money, I don't think that there is that connection and there is that actual respect for what we demand. And let's face it, if part of that is also that we still end up buying the merchandise. We do, I mean...
But I would prefer to buy the merchandise with Rey rather than giving them my money for stuff that are not what I want.
Fair. We are now going to be going on to the Oscar So White controversy. For context, this is what's going on with the Oscars this year, where all 20 of the acting nominations have once again been white. This is the second year running that this has happened. And last year, there's quite a lot of discussion about it, and it seemed to be going in the right direction, except it didn't. Just want to point out that this isn't just having a rant. There are a lot of people who are extremely annoyed at the lack of representation. Jada Pinkett Smith and Spike Lee are both boycotting the Oscars. There's also been calls for Chris Rock, who is hosting the Oscars, to step down. A lot of non-black actors have expressed their sympathy as well. And let's not forget, this isn't just a case of black versus white. Actors like Benicio del Toro didn't get nominated for his role in Sicario. For those people who might perhaps be suggesting that we are ignoring merit versus skin colour, might I remind you that we had some amazing roles this year by people of colour. Idris Elba in Beast of No Nation, Kisana Kiki Rodriguez in Tangerine, Benicio del Toro, as I mentioned, in Sicario. We also did have, although this was not in terms of Oscar worthiness, but we did have Oscar Isaac in Star Wars, Oscar Isaac in Ex Machina, John Boyega in Star Wars. We've had a lot of roles that have been acted in by people of colour. Michael B. Jordan in Creed, the entire cast are straight out of Compton. I could just keep going, can't I? I am just keeping on going. I'll keep it short now. But the whole point is, there is this representation issue in Hollywood, and it comes out at the time of award shows, because that's when you start recognising merit. What do we feel about this controversy?
I feel, as someone who is of black ethnicity and seeing all these great films that have been somewhat snubbed by the industry, is kind of annoying, especially since we had this whole talk last year. So, for instance, I saw Straight Outta Compton for my birthday, asked my friends if they want to go and they wouldn't. I think it was like the best film, particularly for me, liking rap and stuff, of the year. And to see that none of the actors, O'Shea Jackson Jr., Ice Cube's son, played amazingly. Jason Mitchell playing Eazy-E, a great representation of one of who I think is the greatest rappers of all time, encapsulating what he stood for, what he did, all those things. And there's no mention of any of these guys. Take, for instance, also that the only nomination that Straight Outta Compton got was it for original screenplay, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And guess what color the writers were for that? They were white people. I feel like I'm running to the stage, but it's something that's very, very annoying. You have Beasts of No Nation, you had Focus with Will Smith. I heard the film itself wasn't amazing.
Concussion, in this one.
Sorry, my goodness. But the role that Will Smith played, I heard that was amazing. And you have this controversy that people are saying that, well, when, for instance, the BET Awards, you have those are reflections of black people. How come you don't have white people in those? As I heard from Stacey Dash earlier on the internet, on the news.
To use an appropriate popular culture, popular table reference point to that, dear Stacey, there's a reason why when you're number one in Mario Kart, you don't get special shells.
I think also the fact that the only Disney thing I'm aware of, or the only fact of her career that I know of, is that she's Clueless. I think that was great. But you see, you're talking about, we don't have white people in the BET Awards, we need to get rid of that. We need to forget about Black History Month. The reason you have these things is because, for instance, when there are no black people in the Oscars or people of diversity in the Oscars, you need to represent these people in some form of way. And you don't drag the people down when they're trying to build themselves up and then use that as an example to pull them down again.
Can I actually also point out really quickly, with this year's Oscar so white, it's not just the acting nominations. The only real representation of minority at all, quite apart from Straight Outta Compton getting a screenplay nod for its white screenwriters, is Sanjay Superteam, which is an animation. Mm. Just putting that out there. But is there... Because obviously there's a question of merit, which is the argument that sensible, quote-unquote, people take with regards to, well, if they're good enough, they'll get nominated. What do you think about this notion of that? Because, yes, there is an argument to be made about if someone isn't good enough, they shouldn't be nominated, because then it becomes like a token nomination.
I think a lot of the roles that we saw, they weren't really token roles that were taking place. For instance, usually the only time you see black actors getting nominations is when the film is about slavery or something like that, something where they're not really taking control when they play.
But that also doesn't mean they shouldn't be nominated just because they played a slave, you know what I mean?
Not at all, but there's a correlation that you only see these films when they're playing slaves. And I was having this conversation with a friend as well, that other films as well that tend to be nominated in these roles as well are about things about war. So there's almost like this sentiment that they have towards certain categories, and I think slavery is just one of them that pops up continually.
It's almost like a guilt Oscar.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we feel bad because at some point people of your colour were slaves, have an Oscar. That's kind of what it's like.
Don't have reparations, but have yourself an Oscar.
Can I also add that it's frustrating when you don't end up getting opportunities unless you are playing a slave or a maid, as was the case for Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer in The Help?
I completely understand if it's something that's based on a true story.
Such as The Revenant.
So the character, or the it was based on a person who was white, and therefore it should be a white actor playing that. But most characters, it's interchangeable. It doesn't make any difference as to what colour they are for a general storyline.
And if you look at some of the casting calls, and this is something I didn't look into, it's not just a case of there are open auditions and everyone who's talented auditions. That's what happened with Star Wars, which is why we got John Boyega and Oscar Isaac. But in a lot of cases with films, the casting calls are horrendous. For lead roles, they usually specify must be Caucasian. And, you know, if it's a majority of cases, so 7 out of 10, let's say, but even if it was 5 out of 10, 50%, even if it was 4 out of 10, that's problematic. If you have multiple auditions which state you can only audition if you're white, isn't that a case of discrimination?
I think it depends, you know? Like, if you're trying to follow some person which actually existed and then the person was white, then I get why they would do it, you know? It's like asking for someone to play someone who had a part in, you know, someone who actually fight for black rights without being black, you know? That would be the same thing.
We're completely agreeing with that. But it kind of reminds me of the situation that happened with Idris Elba, where he wouldn't be considered to be a Bond, a James Bond.
Oh, that's ridiculous,
yeah. Because James Bond is white because he's British. That was kind of what went on in the news earlier this year.
Mixed race, black and white Brit over here, so...
Cheers.
What's up?
And I'd say Britain is one of the most multicultural countries now, and I mean, like, Idris Elba playing James
that's
Bond
just racist.
Would do a
you know?
That absolutely
racism 101.
It's just that's one specific example, but they're all essentially doing exactly the same thing.
Well, you know, to quote Viola Davis, when she won at the Emmys, it's great to get roles, but you can't be nominated for roles that don't exist.
Exactly. You need to hit the problem at the root, and that is we need to have more people of diversity, more people of colour, of all things, in these roles from the beginning, because it's great naming off all these films that didn't get nominated, but that's only a handful of movies, and you can't then suggest, oh, well, you know, there were loads of other films. If it was 50-50,
It's worrying when you can count on both your fingers the number of people of colour who've won Oscars for acting. That's really worrying. And it's also scary. You know, it shows that once again there's this notion of a certain type of person needing to be marketable, like Brad Pitt's in disproportionate marketing in 12 Years a Slave. We do have a clip of Viola Davis, and she makes a reference to the film industry versus the TV industry, so have a listen to that.
I think there's more volume on TV. Used to be only 3 or 4 channels. Now we have Amazon, Hulu, HBO, Showtime. There's volume, so you have to fill up the volume. And how you fill up the volume is by writing more narratives. And the narratives have got to be varied. Everything can't be the same. And therefore, it gives people the opportunity to come in and show what they can do. It gives women over the age of 40, it gives journeyman actors, people who probably wouldn't have been given an opportunity in film, who would have been the 14th or 15th lead, now that the lead role on a TV show. And TV cares about its audience. TV wants to cater to the demographics of what is America. They're very concerned. They're more tapped into that. Those are the two things that TV does. And then we have the Shondas, you know. But I don't think film has that level of volume.
Is boycotting the answer?
I don't know. I don't know if it's the answer. I think, you know, I'm more zen about it.
So that was a clip of the amazing, amazing Viola Davis. And she makes a note of how TV is more representative and how TV does have much wider, a much more proportionate number of roles for people of color and minorities. What do we think about that, and what do we think Hollywood needs to learn from that kind of model?
I think Hollywood needs to learn that people who are in a minority do still sell. So if you look at shows like Orange is the New Black, which is now having a fourth season and really took the world by storm, they are one of the only shows to have a majority female cast. They have a majority African-American production, so most of the cast and crew are black. And the show is phenomenal. People like binge watch the whole series in a day, and Hollywood needs to see that and understand that.
I think Hollywood needs to understand that people shouldn't be judged upon their skin, upon how talented they are. That's the main thing, you know.
If it's a good show, a good movie, a good storyline, plot, whatever, it will get watched and it will sell.
Yeah,
it
definitely.
It doesn't matter whether the lead is black, white, Spanish, like whatever. It's just got to be a good storyline.
Talking about that, I watched the Golden Globes and I was so frustrated because the guy who played the main role of Pablo Escobar in Narcos, he didn't win. And I get it, it's an American award, but I don't get it why, because the other guy from Mad Men, he just didn't play as well as the guy from the other show. And I think that was just unfair, you know. I felt like he just won because he was American instead of the guy because he was from South America.
I think it was more he won because it was the last season of Mad Men and they like to do that sort of goodbye type. You can have an award because it's the last one. You'll never get a chance again for this.
Yeah, but then people should win based upon their talents. You know what I mean? That's the same thing. That's the rule that should be applied. Just people winning based upon their talents in the end of the day.
I agree, but I'm not saying it's a perfect system. I'm just saying it's a better system than the film industry's.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we can learn from this is I completely agree with Victoria about needing to have a meritocracy. But in order to make that fair, there need to be more opportunities to begin with. And I think that's what we were suggesting. I think we were talking about let's fix it from the beginning rather than just whining about it during award season. And on that note, we have come to the end of the show. Thanks for listening, for those of you who have been listening. On behalf of everyone in the studio, have an amazing rest of Sunday.